Blog Talk Radio.
Adams. This show is sponsored in part by Horton's Funeral Service, Dr. Edward T. Buford, and the Athletic Republic Capital Region, and powered by our great friend, the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com, and that means my super producer and main man, Rick Hampton Sr. Well, folks, in the Coach's Corner, this evening, we have a good one. I mean, this guy is the epitome of using the basketball versus the basketball using him. He has been an outstanding player, All-American, college, high school, coach, film producer, director of foundations. He really needs no introduction, but we're going to introduce him the right way nonetheless. Hit it, Rick.
Down to 7 seconds. You can see the time. Wittenberg, oh, it's a long way. It's good. They won it. On the dunk.
And what a pass. My guest made, you know, we can talk about the shot heard around the world. Well, that was the pass that heard around the world. Dirk Wittenberg, and you know I'm going to treat you right. What a pass, man. What a pass.
Well, I appreciate that. It's only been 37 years ago. We dating ourselves, but what a pass. I wasn't known for passing the ball. That was my counterpart, Sydney, but what a shot or a pass heard around the world, and it's amazing that we are still talking about that today, Butch.
Would you classify that objectively, take your player hat off and put your film producer hat on and your basketball analyst hat? That has to be one of, if not the most, I would say, devastating upsets in the history of NCAA ball. Now, knowing you, Whit, you would say, wait a minute, Coach, that's not an upset. We're supposed to beat them people. But everybody else would look at it as an upset.
Well, you know, this is the reason why you got to look at an upset. You got Elijah Wan and Drexler are in the top 50 in the all-time in the history of the game. And we didn't know that then, but we know that now. And to beat two guys of that caliber on the same team, and that's what make it just a unbelievable victory. Because nobody, first of all, nobody thought we were going to be there, first of all. And then, mind you, getting to the championship game and beating Elijah Wan and Drexler, nobody thought it was possible. And so that really was a David and Goliath story that people just cannot forget.
Well, I know I'd never forget it. And we here in the DMV, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia, we had our chest stuck out because we looked at you and Sydney and Thurl as D.C. guys, and we knew. I can remember the afternoon before the tip-off, and I'm in my car, and a buddy pulls up beside me in Georgia Avenue, and I said, what do you think? And he says, man, you know, guys from D.C. shoot the jumper, so we all right. And I'll never forget that.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you an interesting story. So during the game, I found out there were two coaches that actually thought that we could win the game and really spoke to it publicly. One was Bobby Knight, and number two, it was the late Will Jones that coached at UDC and coached at Maryland.
That's right.
Those were only two coaches in college basketball that publicly in front of the media said we can win that game. That's how many nobody had faith in us thinking that we was going to beat this great Olajuwon and Drexler team. And that's what makes it special when you hear stories like that. And I can't tell you much my relationship and the experiences I had with those two gentlemen, but those two guys, along with all the guys in the, like the DMV and the DC area that believed in us, and obviously my coach and guys at DeMatha and guys in the neighborhood that believed that we could do it, and we did it, and we thought that was something that was a dream come true and something that was very, very possible.
Yeah. Derek Wittenberg is in the coach's corner. And, Derek, speaking of the neighborhood, let's talk about growing up in Prince George's County and becoming one of the first African-American star student athletes to go to the MAPA from Prince George's County. And also I want to add to this, and then I'm going to do like most of your coaches have done, pass you the ball and tell everybody else to get out the way. You were the cousin of, in my opinion, the greatest collegiate player ever, one of the greatest players ever, David Thompson. So talk on those issues.
Well, it's amazing that you say that. So in 1973 and 74, when David Thompson was first on national TV and he's playing against University of Maryland, and I was running around telling all my friends, that's my cousin, that's my cousin. My dad said, that's your cousin, you got to watch it. And, you know, back in those days in the 70s, it was Raycom Sports, Saturday ACC basketball in the mornings, and you just watch ACC basketball. They were the only ones on TV. And I was telling them about my cousin David Thompson, who arguably is one of the best, if not the best, college player of all times, and maybe the ACC player of all time. He was the one that really influenced me and really gave me the idea that NC State was going to be my school. Although I had a soft spot for the University of Maryland, watching Leffie Giselle and John Lucas and those guys, but David Thompson was somebody that I admired. He was a relative of mine. And really, that was, I had this idea that one day I want to play in the ACC. I want to do what my cousin did, win a national championship. And then I signed at NC State, and my dream came true.
And it was so ironic. Not only was David Thompson your cousin, but you had a very similar game to David. You were a smaller version because David is what, about maybe 6'2 or so?
Yeah, David. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's 6'5. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but when I saw you play, and I'm saying, wow, this guy really is David Thompson's cousin because he plays like David. He can shoot the jump shot from anywhere on the floor. He goes hard, and he can jump out of the gym. Now, were these things that you purposely emulated, David, or it was just God-given natural a skill set, and that's just how you played the game?
It was a little bit of everything, right? So you grew up in the playing in the playground first, and then you get a chance when you get good, you play against the older guys, and they beat you up, so you learn how to get tough. Then you get to the organized sports where you play at the boys' club. I played my first organized sports with the Glenn Arden Woods Boys Club, and I played with Dr. Brown, the late Dr. Brown, and he played in the Boys Club. And then all of a sudden you go to junior high school, where I went to William Work Junior High School and played at William Work under Coach Wozlak and Coach Tucci. And then all of a sudden going to the high school ranks, you know, my game just evolved. I started learning how to practice. I started It's just building my craft. You know, back in the day, Butch, when we were coming up, it was about going around every neighborhood and playing basketball, shooting and playing basketball, carrying your basketball around with you, and just putting the work in. And we didn't have these recreation centers until late, so we played on the playground.
That's right. You know, that's right.
anywhere you can find a run and play on the playground on the asphalt, you had to play on the you play on the asphalt. So I honed in my skills. I got better. People, I got a lot of coaches that took interest in me, and I just got better and better. And when I got to DeMatha, I mean, I really started to blossom, obviously, and at DeMatha. Never started at DeMatha until I was a senior. And
that's right.
That was because, you know, DeMatha's philosophy was, you know, everybody was, you know, you're going to play a lot of guys, and you would learn how to kind of wait your turn. If I had went to any school in the Maryland, D.C. area, I would have started for 4 years and played high school. But I wanted to go to DeMatha to make that sacrifice in order to, what, get have an opportunity to be with a great program, win a championship, and then get a college scholarship.
You know, with, that's a great point. And I often think of this, that you and Sidney were two of the all-time great players to ever put a uniform on in the D.C. area. However, as you just stated, you didn't start until your senior year. But you go back to the 2 years of not starting, and that 1978 team was a undefeated team, as I recall, and a national championship team where Coach Wooten would bring you and Sidney and a couple others off the bench, and you would wind up getting more minutes in some cases than the starters. Talk about that team and the team chemistry.
Well, what Morgan taught us was that it was not important whether you start, it's how you finish the game.
That's right.
And we bought that because we wanted to be a part of this great program. You know, Joe Washington was in front of me, and Dutch Morley, who was starting, went to Maryland, started in front of Sidney. We wanted to be a part of this great team. And the seniors, we respected the seniors, what have you. And there was so much competition. But we bought in the fact that, listen, if you want to be a part of this team, you want to be a part of a winning team, you have to be patient, wait your turn. And I think it taught you a lot. By being patient and coming in. And like you said, but we end up finishing the game anyway.
That's
and
right.
We end up there at the end to close the game out. So we didn't even think about it. But if you told a kid today that was a great player and then he can't start, like, as a ninth grader, he going to leave your school. As a 10th grader, he going to leave your school. It's so different now. There's no patience now. Ain't nobody waiting for nothing. Listen, if they don't have a successful year, they might leave you in a junior year and go play somewhere as a senior year. It's just a different era than it was back then. And then you didn't dare, with your parents, you didn't dare question the coach. You don't question the coach. If the coach tell you something too, you get it, you bought in, and you made it work. And that was a difference in our era than it is different today.
Whit, how did we get to this point? Where did the disconnect, so to speak, when and where did that occur? Because I agree with you, but
mm-hmm.
and also agree, while I'm not in the coaching game any longer, thank God, but I see and I talk with the younger guys who are, and they say the same thing.
Yeah, well, let me tell you what's really simple, what's changed today. It went from earning from us, it was a privilege and an honor to play in the ACC and to go and have an opportunity to get a college scholarship. If you revert that now to 30, 40 years later, the college scholarship is not the deal anymore. It's the MBA.
Wow.
Every kid now. They did a survey. 20% kids in Division III, 65% of the kids in Division II, and over 85% of the kids in Division I will say every one of them think that they have an opportunity to go to the NBA. That is the difference. Everything is based on that. Every kid, the workouts are based on that. you know, I had a good friend of mine that coached a very powerful school in New York. And he said he had to get out because he was walking around with an eighth grader, and he had seven people with him, his two parents, two uncles, and his workout guy. And they said to the coach, hey, coach, you got to take this kid because this kid is going to the league. And the coach said to him, but he's in the eighth grade.
Yeah.
He's in the eighth grade. And I got seven adults telling me that he's going to go to the NBA. He said, I got to get out. And the next year he left the school and he went on to college. He said, this is ridiculous. But that is the deal now. Every kid out there is thinks that they're going to go to the NBA. And that's fine. That's fine. But 99% of you are not going to even play in your sport again when you finish. So, you know, some of it unrealistic. So it started to change. The business model changed. Kids are playing earlier. Kids are a lot better. They're getting a lot more exposed with the shoe companies and AAU. Back in our day, there was one AAU tournament, right? I went with Doc and Will Jones down to Jacksonville, Florida.
That's right.
We drove about 16 hours in the car, right? And got out and played some games. That was the only AAU trip we ever took, but that was in my senior year. And now it's blossomed to this thousands of tournaments all over the country. You know, it's just a different model. It's bigger and better. It's more money. It's more expectations. It's a lot more people involved in the game. It's just totally different now. And it's for us old school guys, you got to accept the change because it's so much different than when we came up. But just that's just the era that we're in right now.
Derek Wittenberg is in the Coach's Corner, and Derek, talking about old school, I'm looking again that 1978 DeMatha team, and as I stated earlier, undefeated, number one in the D.C. area, number one in the nation. But yet, compared to other teams, DeMatha teams or Dunbar teams or Spingarn teams that may have been number one in the country or number one in the area, it wasn't a sexy team. They didn't have that big name star, so to speak. But when I think of that team, I think of one of the greatest phrases in all of sport. And it goes like this: the sum of the whole was greater than its parts. Meaning that team, as we talked about, was so deep where you and Sidney and Percy White were on the bench, and then they had starters, and you guys played so well together. You were deep, and everyone stuck to their role. Talk about the chemistry on that great team.
Well, it was a sacrifice. So since we in this era, you know, that team was half white and half black.
Okay.
You know, and we didn't even think about that. Our coach talked about principles. Our coach talked about teamwork. He talked about being a part of something bigger than yourself. And Morgan Wooten never mentioned the word win.
Mm.
He only mentioned process. The end result is that we at DeMatha in our culture, that we was expected to win the championship, but we were more focused on the process. What's the process? The process that you got to be a good student. You got to do things the right way. You got to be a good teammate. And everybody got to do it together. And you got to work hard. And working hard meant that working hard only gives you a chance to succeed. It doesn't guarantee you success. And there's going to be some pitfalls. So we live by the process of the principle, which they call the culture now. Well, we've already, at DeMatha, the culture was built on the pioneers before. You know, the Kenny Roys and Adrian Dantleys and the Kenny Carrs, you know, and the Browns and all the guys that were fought before us, they paved the way for all of us. And then we just followed the standard. That's what you do. When you're in a program like that, you just follow the standard You don't question it. And that's why that team was so great, because we were part of the standards of DeMatha High School and Morgan Wooten, that you just do the right things, you play together, you play hard, and good things will happen. And that's what happened to that 78 team. And that team didn't have great talent. We were good. We were talented.
Yeah.
But we was a great, great team. You got to be a team to go undefeated. You got to be a great team, and we were a great team.
No question about it. I was an assistant coach with Mackin, and we had great teams. I mean, great players: Kenny Payne, Kevin Black, Mark Nickens, Puffy Crooks, Mo Young, just to name a few. And we were able to beat everybody else, but we could never beat you guys. It was always a very close game, but in the end, the DeMatha Stags would always find a way to win the game. Share with our listeners your Morgan Wooten story, Derek Wittenberg's Morgan Wooten story or stories.
Morgan, what a interesting figure he was, and we've had many conversations with him. I think the best one was when I took a trip with him to Europe, and actually, as you remembered, I was a leaper, and I can do all these different dunks, and I won the dunking contest in Baltimore Civic Center in 1968 against Gene Banks and Albert King and Louis Lloyd. And when I left college, when I left to go to college, I would tour with Morgan and go to all these clinics. And I went over to Italy and we've conducted a clinic in Rieti. And the people I was demonstrating and shooting and dunking and stuff like that. And then the late Willie Sojourner, he was a great player over in Italy, said he wanted me to stay over and play in Italy for money. I never forget, Morgan right over in Italy says, Willie, he says, that may be true, but he's going back to school to get an education. And I said, that's right, coach, I'm going back to school to get an education. And that was one of many stories that Morgan that really, really was thinking about the individual. We had such a close relationship, and we had an honest relationship. I could talk to Morgan about anything under the sun. And Morgan was a man of principle, a man that always, his four principles: God, family, school, and then basketball. That's what he lived by. And that's what I think that made him successful at the end of the day. He never took a college job, but he really was the mastermind, the pioneer for putting DeMatha on the mat with a nationally recognized basketball program that people all over the world know.
Mm-hmm. Now, you speak of relationships. Talk about the very special relationship that you have with your backcourt mate, high school, college, Sidney Lowe. And I think you can make the argument that the Lowe-Wittenberg backcourt is one of the best collegiate backcourts of all time. Talk about that special relationship on and off the court with Sidney.
Yeah, very interesting start to our career when we first came to DeMatha. First pickup game, Sidney was tabbed as one of the best guards in the D.C. area, and I was tabbed as one of the best guards in the Maryland area. I went to William Work, which is not far from DeMatha, and Sidney, we came from the D.C. area. And we right away, we just clicked. We ended up playing with each other, never against each other in pickup, playing with each other, and the rest is history. I believe that we might be the only tandem that two guards that played in high school and won a national championship and played in college to win a national championship. I believe we're one of the only tandems that've done that. Our relationship grew from the time we, from DeMatha on to NC State. We were roommates the first two or three years. And then people just associate us together. By our associate, not just DeMatha, but you know, we had a tight knit bond. We were always together on and off the court. And then we just developed this relationship that's going to be a lifetime relationship. And it was not just a basketball relationship, but it was a personal relationship that we still have today.
Wow, yeah. Talk about NC State. And, you know, again, in high school, in 3 years, what do you guys lose? Some like maybe 3-4 games, if that?
We lost 7 games. We lost 29-4 my first sophomore year. In my junior year, we went 28-0. And then we was 28-3 my senior year. So we lost 7 games, and that's not even including all the summer league games. You can add another 30 games to that. So we were 100-something in 7. We only lost 7 games in high school. It's funny you said that about NC State. So we go there my first year, and we played for Norm Sloan. Norm Sloan recruited us.
That's right.
And the first year we went 20-8. We lost 8 games, and I told Sidney, I said, shoot, this team, we're not very good. We lost more games in our first year than we lost in high school. But you realize in college real quick, there's a lot of other good players around the country. You know, we played against James Worthy and Michael Jordan and Albert King and you know, Gene Banks and all the great players that was in there, Ralph Sampson in college. So we played against some great players, but we lost losing 8 games, man. We thought that was the end of the world. I don't know where we lose 8 games, man.
You know, later on we'll get into the ACC in the early 80s and the number of great players. And then Sloan leaves, and at one point you and Sidney, you were recruiting Coach Wooten to come, and I think the offer on the table was $700,000, and back then that was a lot of cash.
That was a lot of money back then.
Yeah.
And Nobody was getting offered that kind of money, but I just don't think it was not right timing for Coach Wooten. He had a young family. They had gotten kind of settled in, you know, 5 kids, and to uproot his whole family and go down. Now, Morgan, now, you don't know this. I did a film on him, but Morgan was born in Durham.
Right.
He was born in Durham, North Carolina, so he has North Carolina roots. So he was born in Durham, so it wasn't unfamiliar to him. But I just think the timing wasn't right because he had built the Mather program. He was doing very well with his camps. So financially, he wasn't hurting. So for a high school coach, he was doing well with all his camps and clinics.
Sure.
But I think it was a family decision. And I think he just thought that he didn't want to come down to NC State for money. It had to be in his heart, and he didn't want to disrupt his family, so he stayed at DeMatham.
And then you get this young, upcoming coach, and I can remember you and others saying, well, I don't know much about this guy, but he's coming from Iona College. I mean, our new coach owned a college versus Iona College. And, of course, that was Jimmy V, Jim Valvano. Talk about that.
Yeah, well, Jimmy was what a character he was. I remember his first press conference. He's coming in there, and he was really he told a lot of jokes. He's a wonderful personality. But one thing stuck in my mind. I'd never forget it. He said, "I'm gonna look at you 3 different ways. I'm gonna look at you as a player, a coach, and a person." And I said that he said that, and we're gonna win the national championship. And that's his very first words in his press conference. You don't hear that. Somebody coming to campus and the first day, they're thinking about winning a national championship. And he talked about it from day one. And that's what I admired about Jim. And Jim actually spent time with us. You know, most coaches say, hey, come in my office anytime. You can contact me. You can come over. We can talk about anything. Well, most times players don't take him up on it. And I just happened to take him up on that. And we had many of deep conversations in that office about a variety of different topics. We talked about politics. We talked about living in the South. We talked about everything under the sun. And it really was a teaching moment because here's a guy that's he's supposed to be my coach, but we're not even talking basketball. We talk about everything under the sun. He's talking about how important it was to get your education because he said when you finish playing, when you're working at IBM or one of these companies, he says they don't cheer for you when you walk past your office, right? the cheering stops. And then we had all kinds of neat conversations like that. And I just admired, enjoyed my whole relationship, right? Because now, Butch, you know, we've been in coaching, and the one person that you remember is your coach.
That's
because
right.
Your coach has really took the time and built a relationship with you. It's not all about the coaching. It's about them spending that extra time with you during those tough times. And that's what I admired about the coaches that I was blessed with some with great parents and a lot of outstanding coaches who really cared about you at the end.
You know, Morgan Wooten was a tremendous friend and mentor to me. He offered me a job as his assistant once. I loved him to death. And one of his favorite sayings that I adopted and listening to you and what you just said brought to mind when Morgan would always say, they don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. I'm certain you've heard that before.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. He meant that, right? It's not what you say, it's what you do. And it was very interesting because the one thing I never understood to the day, and nobody wants to talk about this, is two figures that were very influential in our coaching career and playing career. That was John Thompson and Morgan Wooten.
Mm.
Two men that both became Hall of Famers, both became very successful, and why they had an adversarial relationship was really strange for me because I love Morgan and I love John Thompson.
Same here.
And John Thompson would not come and recruit me because of their relationship.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
That was, and I had a relationship with both men.
Mm-hmm.
And to this day, it's like the unspoken conversation about DC basketball. Here's two great, powerful figures that have been successful in their own right with different journeys, right? Because John had mm-hmm. to fight more on growing up in Jim Crow days and racism, and he really built up a Georgetown program that was nowhere, a different. And then Morgan was supposed to be a lawyer working for an orphanage that built up DeMatha. What two contrasts of two different men that had great success, but they never connected. And for me, that was very, very interesting to see as the years go on that those two men, as successful they were, and nobody really has discovered what actually is something personal between the both of them, but the respect and admiration that you have for both men is unshakable because they both were successful in their own right.
Well, I certainly can relate to that because I loved and respected both individuals. Both were very influential in my career coming up. I can remember working camps with Coach Thompson, and I can remember calling Morgan Wooten up at the age of 23 and saying, Coach, I want to go to a big-time summer camp and work as a coach and get experience. And he said, okay, Butch, this is what you do. You write several schools, use my name as a reference, and we'll go from there. Well, long story short, I did that, and I got two replies back, one from Notre Dame and one from UNC. And I went to UNC. I arrive on campus. Dean Smith comes up to me and said, you Coach McAdams from D.C.? Yes, sir. Welcome to Carolina. Hope you have a great time. Morgan Wooten recommended you, but I want you to know that John Thompson is one of my best friends. And so I'll never forget that. And I had great respect for both. And no bigger figures, both as men and as coaches, than John Thompson and Morgan Wootten. Now, let's talk about the process. You had mentioned several times the term process. What was the process at North Carolina State? Valvano comes in. He says, we're going to win the national championship. You did eventually. But take us through that process, that journey to get to winning the national championship in 1983.
Well, Valvano's basketball philosophy is really simple. Actually, our practices were mostly 5-on-5. He believed in playing the game. So the more you played, and he believed in playing the game, he believed in having fun, and he believed in really allowing his players to have input of what's going on. I can't tell you more times than not he'd ask me at Sydney, what defense y'all will do, what y'all feel out there. He really gave us ownership of the team. And I never forget he wasn't this regiment tactician guy that's going to do these 900 drills all the time. He believed in working on time and score. He believed in offensive basketball, fast break basketball, and he believed in doing whatever defensively you needed to do to win the game. So if we had to play a boxing one on Ralph Sampson to win and stop one guy, that's what we want to do. We're going to develop a game plan, a scheme that whatever we have to do, no matter what we've done all year, we're going to put together a game plan. We're going to win this game right here. And he was a mastermind of it. He just studied, and he had a feel. He really had he can adjust in a game at the drop of a hat. And that's what kind of coach he was. He was they say, all of us say, not me and our players, that he was one of the best game coaches that ever played, that ever coached in college, because he was just that good.
Well, I think that was certainly on display during the tournament. And as we mentioned earlier, that historic final game against Houston. Edge to coaching, edge to game strategy goes to NC State and Jimmy V.
Well, I can't tell you, but how many times he did in that course of the game, we changed. The first half, we came out firing. We were shooting jumpers all over. We wasn't making anything. But he wanted us to be loose. Come out, fire. Let's be loose. We fired. We wasn't hitting anything. And we still, we had an 8-point lead. We had an 8-point lead. Second half, they come back and make a run. He always talked about runs. You know, it's another team is going to make a run. You got to come back and make a run. They said, but you always got to win the first 5 minutes of the first half, the first 5 minutes of the second half.
Amen.
And then you got, obviously, you got to win the end of the game. He says, put me in position. I'll put you in position to win the game, then you got to go win it. I can get you there, but you got to win the game. And that's what he did. He put us in position. And we won. If you look at the second half, we scored most of our points in transition. We didn't score them in the half court. We scored off of turnover. Sydney found me in the corner. Sydney hit some deep shots. We hit most of our shots in the second half off of transition. That's the best shot you can get, because if you get down the court with everybody disorganized and nobody's picking nobody up, most of the time, if you watch that film, I was wide open. It was nobody near me because they didn't hustle back and pick nobody up. You know, that's what happens in transition. The big guys went to the middle. If the guards are jogging back and you just beat them down court, nobody was near me.
Mm-hmm.
And Sydney, he doesn't get enough credit, but Sydney was like one of the smartest players that ever played in NC State. Forget about the best. He's one of the smartest point guards. He was like the coach on the floor. He knew what everybody was. He knew who was happy and who wasn't happy. One time we came down the court in Sydney, he passed the ball to me. He passed it to Thurl for on the other side for a layup, and I got mad at him. I said, why didn't you pass me? He said, I pass the ball to you all the time. But Thurl, everybody started to figure me and you out.
That's
but
right.
He doesn't get a credit. See, one thing they don't say about players.
You know, one of the things that I felt you guys had an excellent chance to win, actually two things. Number one, experience, playing together, but also you guys were so battle-tested coming to the ACC.
Yeah.
It was nothing that you were going to be afraid of or hadn't seen prior. Talk about ACC basketball again in the 80s and give us, for our listeners, the favorite Derek Wittenberg statement about what you did to Michael Jordan. as only Witt can say it.
All you listeners and all the ladies out there, you got to excuse me, but really, I kicked Michael Jordan's ass, okay? But the 80s was special. Ralph Sampson, who probably was a three-time player of the year, was probably one of the best college basketball players that played in the ACC. A guy from Harrisburg, Virginia, great player. Michael Jordan, you had on the other side, you had Albert King and Buck Williams from Maryland. You had Larry Nance down there in Clemson. You had Vince Taylor and Gene Banks at Duke. It was so many great players. And then Maryland, you had the Branch and the late Lynn Bias. And, I mean, it was so many great, great players. And they all stayed in school. See, it's not like today. They all stayed for 3 and 4 years. And so you played, everybody got better. So that's what the competition was great. That year, the senior year, we played against the number one team in the country that year 7 times between North Carolina, Virginia, and Houston. We kept playing against the number one team in the country. Number one and number two teams in the country all the time.
I didn't know that. Whit, I didn't know that stat per se. I knew, as I stated, that you had a gauntlet of a schedule. But specifically, seven times number one. So, again, to my point, you get to the playoffs, you get to the Final Four, you get to the championship game, no big deal. You've been through that 7 times practically.
Yeah. And listen, people forget, they take it for granted. We beat North Carolina in the ACC tournament in overtime. And we were down 6 points. We came back and won that semifinal game. And then we had only beat Carolina once in my 4 years, and we had never beaten Virginia. We had never beaten Ralph. We beat them twice that year in the ACC championship in the Western Regional Final. The other 8 games, Ralph won every game against us. Every game. So, like, it was beating North Carolina and Virginia back then was in the 80s was hard. Very hard. They had the best players. They had the best team and the best coaches. So, I mean, that's what the difference back in the 80s back then is that it was such great competition. But when we played against everybody else, like to your point, shoot, we ain't fear no Houston. You know, we didn't feel the University of Georgia. Georgia had a good team, you know, with Terry Fair and the Fleming boys from New York. They had a good team, too. So, everybody has some good teams, but we just didn't fear because we played a great schedule.
No question about that. And let's talk about the day when you found out that the coach had tremendous health challenges. And then, of course, eventually giving that passionate speech and then going to his reward. You talked about the special relationship that you had off the court with Coach V. But take us through those trying times when, like a family member, you would see him struggling health-wise.
Yeah, we did. He was diagnosed with cancer somewhere in the 90, 92. And to be honest with you, because of his attitude and his passion for life, he was so positive, which I thought he was going to be. We really
so did I.
When he came in that Reynolds Coliseum and I saw him so weak the first time, it still didn't dawn on me, especially after he gave the speeches, oh, I ain't worried about B. He's gonna beat it. He's gonna fight them. Jim's gonna win. And it didn't dawn on me until it actually happened, when he actually went to Duke Hospital, and he could only be in the hospital. And to be honest with you, I didn't go to the hospital to see him. I talked to him on the phone. I didn't want to see him that way. But still today, still in his last days, you know, because Mike Krzyzewski asked his son, saw him take his last breath, right?
Mm-hmm.
And just in his last days, even according to Mike, that he still was positive. And that's when he formed the Jimmy V Foundation for Cancer Research on his deathbed, put everybody on the board, and he says, It may not save my life, but it may save someone you love, and everybody's going to be affected by cancer, and we got to do something about raising awareness of cancer and raise money to try to find a cure, even in his last day. And so in saying that, his legacy lives on through the V Foundation. We've given up over 600 grants. We raised over $300 million in the last 26 years. And the V Foundation is just making headways in research and awareness in the cancer world. And it's all got Jim Balvano's name on it. And we thank ESPN and all the partners and all the folks that's involved, and all the people out there that's donated and been involved. And more importantly, all the people who survive and thrive with cancer. And so he's done some big things even as he's passed on. He's really still got an impact on human life, and then that's what's important.
Derek Wittenberg is in the coach's corner, and I knew this was going to be fantastic. He's simply one of the best. And, Derek, when you walked into Coach Thompson, the aforementioned coach, John Thompson, he would have on his desk a deflated basketball, a basketball with no air. And that was symbolic of what are you going to do when the ball no longer bounces. When I go to speak to young people, I always talk about the many other avenues that one can take in sport besides a player. Well, you're one of the few people that you really have exploited or taken nearly all of the avenues. Outstanding coach, outstanding player, commentator, administrator, and film producer. Man, you have done so many great things. Talk about how that all came together.
Well, first of all, you know, being the first generation graduate and the first of my family to get a four-year degree is bigger than one thinks. And when somebody talk about education and John Thompson having that on his desk, is that the message is one day that you're not going to be able to play ball anymore, right, professionally, or play ball after college. Something you just ain't going to happen. And a lot of the coaches have said, Thompson, Morgan Wooten, all the coaches said, not just getting an education, but what you're going to do with the education, right? You got to do something with it. A lot of people can get it, but you got to do something with it. And I always thought that I think that we are more than what we have done, right? we have these transferable skills that we learned in coaching and playing that we can run a company or we can build a business. We can do anything we desire to do if we want to do it. And I believed in that. And that's part. See, basketball is, you know, like you opened the show with that we use basketball and not let basketball use me. Well, if you really believe that, that's what education does for you, is that it allows you to really find out that you can do more with your talents. And when the basketball is gone, and to our point, when they take the whistle away, but see, I have a whistle at my desk, and I have a deflated ball. So for you coaches out there, one day you're not going to be able to coach too. And you got to be on a podcast or a radio show, and you got to keep on empowering, helping people, even then when the ball is gone and when the whistle is taken away from you too.
Wow.
And I just believe that it's now that I've finally found out what my passion is. My passion is education and helping young people and helping individuals, you know, and be empowered about their journey. We all have a journey of success. We got to believe in it, and we got to run with it and believe in ourselves. Muhammad Ali said something very important. Don't forget to bet on yourself. And a lot of individuals forget that. They forget to bet on themselves when they can do whatever they want to do if they put their mind to it.
Expound on the term that you just used, because it's so important. And Whit, I've always said that regardless of skill level, every boy and girl, every young man and young lady should at least play a year of sports for the carryover value in life, as you just hit on. Talk about how your career in basketball, being successful, has helped you in your careers after basketball.
What we learn in sports, what we learn at being a part of a team, what we learn as being a coach, we learn the principles of what you should live by. Right? You got to be the best person you can be. You got to have a work ethic. You got to learn how to work within a team. You got to be selfless and meaning and humble that you are not bigger than the team. So those skills and things that we learn, and then nobody gives you a book of leadership. Just because you're a coach, that don't mean that you know how to lead. In order to lead, you got to know how to follow. And in order to follow, you got to understand what it's like to be a teammate. And so if you are a good teammate, you will, one, learn your teammates, value your teammates, understand your teammates, play with your teammates. Number two, you got to be able to learn how to follow instruction, be coachable, and follow rules and follow instruction. That's all being part of a team. You got to respect authority, right? The coach is the coach, and you have to respect that he's trying to do the best for you and the team. So these principles that we have learned, that we can transfer them into our business world, it's the same thing we grew up with in sports teaches you that. That's why in motivational speaking, they're always seeking coaches. Because if you work in the business world, right, and you got a company of 400 people, you're not going to have that interrelationship with those 400 people. So the team concept in a big company sometimes doesn't fall into place. It's a different kind of relationship and a different kind of team. These teams we've been coaching and working on and playing on, is that it's a relationship, right? And it's a bond that lasts forever. I said earlier, You remember your team, you remember your coaches, because you spend that quality time together. And it just doesn't happen like that in the workforce.
Talk to us about how you initially got started in film production and documentaries, man. I just love your documentaries. That Survive in Advance was just awesome. It was awesome. The Gospel to Mac.
Yeah.
And then, of course, my favorite was Morgan Wooten, The Godfather of Basketball. And you have one on the horizon that it's going to not rival The Last Dance. I think it's going to surpass The Last Dance. Share with us the previous projects and give what you can. Give us a little sneak preview of your up-and-coming documentary.
Well, it's so interesting. I fell in the everybody says that some things happen for a reason, and the Lord has to steer his ways of doing, putting things in your place. But, you know, I was fired at Fordham. And everybody thought, you know, just 2 years prior to that, I had the best season they ever had. I graduated all my kids, and we won 18 games and 10 games in the league. And I thought that, wow, you know, we on to something good, and then you get fired. And a lot of people think sometimes that when you get fired, that's the end of the world. And I reflected on it. And through that, I went to work at ESPN. And that's when I went to my friend Jonathan Hock. And he was a director, and he did some films with ESPN. I said, we thought we had a good story with the 83 team. And we made a pitch to ESPN, and the rest is history. When we put that film together, I was just telling the story, Butch. If me looking back 30 years ago, telling a story about my journey to DeMatha and NC State, and then that team, that the miraculous run we had, and just telling a story. We didn't know how good it was going to be. I was just telling the story. And then we backed that up with the Gospel According to Mac about Bill McCartney, who's the founder of Promise Keepers, and about his relationship with his daughter in Salinasi, and them winning the national championship, and then the kid passing away, and he died of cancer. I mean, what a story there. And then I said we had to do a story. I wanted to get something on the record for Morgan Wooten because I knew that he was getting older, and I wanted people to remember him, and we had to have something on record. So I asked Morgan for his permission and his family, and they granted. And so Bill Hayes and I from Figure Eight Films put together a film that we think that it's chronicles and tells that it gives a good narrative about how Morgan has empowered so many different, not just players, but people all over the world, and not just in basketball, but just being an ambassador for Washington, D.C. And so I thought that was an important piece to do, and unfortunately Morgan passed last year, but I think we have an excellent film for your folks out there. You know, The Godfather of Basketball, Morgan Wooten, The Godfather of Basketball.com. You can go in there and watch that film. I think it's an excellent film, and it tells a really good story about a man who's really built a powerhouse. And this new ACC film is going back to what we talked about, Butch, right? In order to enhance your destiny, your past empowers your future. And if you don't pay homage to the people before you, it won't give you enough perspective. And so doing this film for the ACC and ACC Network and ESPN, we're going to go back and show you how this great league of the ACC got started. From the 50s and the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, 2000s, and present day. We think it's going to be a wonderful film, full of information, full of historians and pioneers, and I think it's going to be a really good film for the fans to see.
What were your, and I know that you got a lot of calls and a lot of questions, and you're really busy on focusing on doing your thing, but for the sake of this interview, what were your thoughts on the Prince George's County basketball in the water Kevin Durant production. Your thoughts on that being a product of Prince George's County?
Well, I thought it, I mean, what a storyline, and those gentlemen, Beasley and the guys, Oladipo, I think, and Quinn Cook, I think they got wonderful stories. And they each have a wonderful journey in their own right. And Oladipo, got to remember that I was the Oladipo before Oladipo. So let's get that on the record.
Well, that's true. No question about that.
So I was the Oladipo before that. And let me tell you how ironic it is. So he's
okay.
Playing for Indiana Pacers, which I coach Nate McMillan at NC State, and he's a DeMatha guy. So,
yep.
So like, things become full circle, right? History becomes full circle. So I think it was a wonderful storyline in terms of those guys and what they've done. And I think that the history of PG County is so big that it's hard to cover it in one session.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the research that you have to do, there's many guys that it's easy to not forget some guys and some, but I think that they did some wonderful things. I love the Kevin Durant story. Quinn Cook, I've known him and his family. He's a DeMatha guy.
Sure.
Oladipo and Beasley. I know those kids. I recruited those kids, and my hat's off to them. I think it was really something that was positive. It's just so hard, very hard, to do a piece that requires about 2 hours.
That's correct.
You still can't put it. And then it's a complicated piece, right? Because you got Prince George's County, but you got the DMV, where there's so many other great players in every era, and from D.C. and Virginia, and you got Prince George's County. So there's a lot to cover in there. And I thought, I loved some of the things they did. And I know where they were going with the story, and I've watched it twice, you know, because I'm a documentary buff now. I'm watching all kinds of documentaries, and I think they did a good job, but they didn't have enough time, I think, to really put together a comprehensive piece, because the history, when you say the word history, Butch, it's deep. You got to go back until. There might have been some great players in the early 60s that came from Prince George's County.
Oh, there were.
So you know those guys. So,
mm-hmm.
like, when you dig into that history, man, that history. Look, in Prince George's County, there was only two high schools. You know, Frederick Douglass and another one. There was only two high schools at one time in Prince George's County, you know. And so, you know, when you dig into the history and start talking about it, it's hard to cover, but I commend the project. I think it was positive. It gives a light. You know, there's a lot of college coaches that recruited in the Prince George's County area that probably could have spoke to the whole project. It's just so much to cover, and it's hard to get everything in a 53-minute piece. You know, I mean, that's why Survive in Advance was a 2-hour film. That's why The Gospel Quarter Mac was a 2-hour film. Those were the first 2-hour films for the 30 for 30 series.
Mm-hmm.
The two films that I was involved in. Now, this 6-part series that we're doing on the History ACC, each session is an hour and a half film. That's
okay.
How much research we're doing. Each episode, 6-part series, is an hour and a half each series. That's what we're trying to ensure, to capture all the history in the ACC. I've even found the guy that was the last living individual that was in the meeting in 1954 that started the ACC, Irwin Smallwood. He lives in Greensboro, of Winston-Salem. He's the last living person that was at the meeting that started the ACC. He's 94 years old. That's how deep we're going back in the history.
And Whit, for the sake of our listeners, give us an idea on how long does it take a quality documentary, as you talked about history, research, et cetera. What's the time frame on production?
It depends on the film. It depends on the company and who's producing the film. So ESPN, right, they gave us a budget, and that Survive in Advance, from top to bottom, I would think it was really a 2-year project, because I got turned down by ESPN twice, and third time is a charm. I got turned down by a lot of different networks, and from Bang the Bullets, probably about a 7-month process between the filming, the editing, and getting all the footage. The footage costs a lot of money. You got to go to all these libraries and research. And my hat's off to Jonathan Hawk. He's one of a wonderful directors. And what I liked about him, he allowed me to tell the story and put it together for me, right? And that's his expertise of putting stories together. And that's not easy, man. That's to get the flow and to get the emotion and get the narrative right. Those are complicated parts to put it. So it takes a lot of work. And I was heavily involved into all of those processes, the research, the editing, because you know what? That's my baby. If you talk about the 83 team, I have to be involved. We got to make sure we get this story right. So I think that it's important. It takes a lot of time, but the actual production of a documentary in 2 hours is going to at least take 7-8 months production time before you can actually finish. But it may be a 2-year process. You see that motion pictures take 7 to 8 years before they can even get on TV. So documentaries and films are not an easy process, and they take quite a bit of time.
And also, before you go, let our listeners know once again how they can get a hold of your previous projects. I've seen most of them, and folks, I straight up, masterpiece, Survive, in Advance, great piece. The Gospel According to Mac, great piece. And, of course, as I said, from a personal aspect, my favorite was The Godfather of Basketball, Morgan Wootten. And it talked about Coach Wootten, as we've had the discussion this evening, not just him as a coach, but as a man, a mentor, a friend, and also being on the forefront of integration as it pertains to student-athletes in the Catholic League.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Morgan was very, very influential and positive about that. And, somebody was asking me that day, Butch, when they started busing and integrating schools back in the early 70s, we talked about the math of how many incidents we had. And then I can't recall many, even in the school, in the cafeteria, in the practice. We used to go over to Paul DeVito's house, the guy's house. I mean, we didn't even think about that kind of stuff. And I'm not saying it didn't occur. It probably occurred somewhere in the school, but we didn't face it that much. And thinking back at my class, at my 40th high school reunion, we started to look back, and you would think that DeMatha, 800-some students, that we thought it was like 50, 60 kids. But back then, 79, 76, there was only 17 African Americans in the school.
Wow.
It was only 17. that's it.
Yeah, and the pioneers, to my knowledge, in terms of student athletes, were first John Austin, Sleepy Austin, and who transferred from Carroll to DeMatha, and then secondly was Johnny Jones.
Johnny Jones, yeah, those two guys. I mean, yeah, it was only two guys back then, but the leader, right? Morgan Wootten, mm-hmm. John Moreland, the leadership of DeMatha, they are the ones that spearheaded to make it happen, right? They have to buy in, and they made it a really positive environment for us.
Last question, speaking on a positive environment, we just touched on integration and how you would have a team and a school of both black students and white students all coming together as one. Dirk Wittenberg, what are your thoughts on the country today? Turbulent times, inequality, police brutality. Give us your reflections.
Well, it's unfortunate what we see today, and it took, what has been different, right? We saw the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King in 1968, and now we fast forward to 2020, and what has changed? The behavior of people have been cyclical and up and down in terms of mankind, and everybody is, we all are not perfect, but we saw what happened to George Floyd. And now it shines a light on all of us that, what is equality? What is fairness? What's racism really about? And now, in us facing it, we've lived it, right? And I've had a life that is full of a multiple of different races and personalities. We got Italian friends, black friends, Jewish friends. And when you have a situation like this, it brings you back to what's real. And just every cop is not a bad cop. Every white person is not a racist. But have we come a long way? Yes. Do we have some work to do? Yes. And one of the things that I said to an individual today, a CEO, I said, I have confidence in the people that I associate with NC State, the V Foundation, that we know that this situation is really in the forefront of people's minds. But what we're going to try to do is not just make a statement, is that we're going to make a stand by trying to do better in our space, Butch. That's all you can do. You cannot take your magic wand and say racism is going away. It ain't going away. But what each individual has a responsibility to do right now is in your own space, you can make a difference. You can make a change. You can empower your friends and have these conversations. I'm having conversations with people that I've never had conversations before. I've got CEOs that I'm talking to, and everything is not done maliciously. But can we move forward, and can we make a difference? Because, Bush, the younger people are making a difference. And when Martin Luther King assassinated, it was just black. 2020, you got blacks and white protesting together. We've made a difference. There is a change.
Yes.
So in your own space, I say to you, with your friend, with your company, make a change with your coworker, right? I can make a change there. Make a change in your hiring practices with some of my friends. I said have a dialogue with the women and the people in color in your jobs and
yes.
work.
Have
those conversations.
That's right. Dirk Wittenberg, excuse me, man. You know what? This has been outstanding. It's been awesome. But what do you expect when you have a winner? A winner on the court and an even bigger winner off the court. Always had great respect for you. It's even greater now. Hey, man, thank you for carving time and visiting with our listeners here in the Coach's Corner.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me. And to all the folks in the DMV, peace and love.
My man. And that was simply one of the best, Dirk Wittenberg. Hope you enjoyed the show. Next up in the Coach's Corner, another DeMatha Stagg, Hall of Fame NBA writer. He is David Aldridge. David Aldridge tomorrow evening at 7 p.m. But until then, hey, folks, make good decisions, and I want to thank Horton's Funeral Service. They're located 600 Kennedy Street Northwest, 202-829-9000. Dr. Edward T. Buford, 202-667-8818. And the Athletic Republic Capital Region, they're going to be opening soon in District Heights. And as always, Rick Hampton, great job. Love you, brother. And the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com, visit them for the replay of this show and the other shows. Again, the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com. Until tomorrow, make good decisions, because life is hard, but it's even harder when you're stupid. We'll see you tomorrow at 7 p.m. David Aldridge in the Coach's.